Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Mathura Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Gauranga Maya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Gaurapranda All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Sri Prabhupada. Namaha Vishnu Padaya Vishnu Prasaya Vintura Srimati Bhakti Mata Swami Mati Namaste Saraswati Gaurava Bhana Bhutana Vishnu Sinai Vasacharya Sitaya Mandeham Sri Guru Sri Taparkamaham Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sri Sri Rupam Sakutam Sadhana Ravana Tamitam Samasachita Sadvaitam Sadhutam Hirijanas Jaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Param Sadhana Ravata Sri Vishadam Nikamstha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya October 26, 2011 in Auckland, New Zealand. This is Govardhan Puja Day. Our main Govardhan Puja class is going to be on Sunday morning. But today we're asked to speak about humility. And of course this fits very nicely with the Govardhan Lila. Because among the many purposes for the Govardhan Lila was to create humility in Indra. Indra was thinking, I'm the king of heaven, I can do what I want, and everybody has to be appreciative of me and worship me. And who's this God who wants worship instead of me? So that's our basic problem in this material world, isn't it? I'm thinking, yes, I should be the center. One devotee was saying that when he first read Krishna book before he joined the movement, and he was reading about the rasa dance, he thought, how come Krishna gets all the gopis? Aren't there any for me? Right? Generally, we want to be the center. We think everybody's looking at us, everybody's thinking about us, everybody's talking about us. The things that we do are very important. We have to admit that often what's motivating us is simply that people will appreciate us and respect us. Right? I'm sorry to say, that's often our motivation, even when we're thinking I'm a devotee. And Indra's also a devotee. He's not a demon. He's actually a devotee. But he has this mood of, for Krishna, I want to be a controller. What service do I want to do for Krishna? I want to control the material world. That's his mood. And his mood is also, by Krishna's grace, I'll be able to control the material world. You know, I want to control the material world, and Krishna will give me the grace to do it. That's his mood. His mood is not just, I want to make Krishna happy. His mood is, I want to make Krishna happy, so I'll get what I want. Just like Diti was very nicely serving her husband Kasyapa. Why? So she could arrange to kill his other children. That was her motive. We have people like that in our life. They're really nice to us because they want something. Has that ever happened to you? Somebody's really, they're very pleasant and they're, you think, what a good friend. And later you find out that they didn't really care about you. They cared about getting something from you. Well, actually all of our relationships in material consciousness are more or less like that. And if we're honest, we have to admit that that's how we also deal with other people. That we're dealing with nature, we're dealing with other living entities, thinking, what can I get? And how do we know that? Because when we don't get what we have in mind, we become angry, or sad, or disappointed. And that's how you know you have the wrong master. And we find this even in the Hare Krishna movement. You know, I'm doing so much service.
for Krishna, for Guru, out of love. And when I don't get the kind of external reciprocation that I want, if I become angry or upset, then I know my motives were wrong. That really, I wasn't working for Krishna's pleasure, I was working for something for myself. So of course, better to work for Krishna, even selfishly, than not work for Krishna. That's a good first step, or second or third step. But this is the mood that Indra's in. We see this later in Krishna Lila, where Indra asked for the return of his mother's earrings, and Krishna went and got everything from Bhomasura, gave it to Indra, and Indra's like, thank you, Lord, for killing Bhomasura and giving me back what I wanted. And then Satyabhama takes the Parijata tree, and Indra goes to fight with Krishna. You know, thank you very much, Krishna, when you're pleasing me, and when you're not pleasing me, boom. So we can see how much this is also our mood. You know, when Krishna's doing something that I like, yes, Krishna's great. I've got good health and my family members are nice to me and etc. Yes, Krishna's wonderful. And then something we don't like, we break our leg or somebody spreads false rumors about us or we lose all our money or something. Oh, who's that Krishna? I don't like him anymore. So this is Indra's mood. And that mood, by the way, as we'll see in a moment, is the opposite of humility. So Krishna is very kind because he knows that you can't be happy in that kind of mood. And we'll look at why in a moment. Why happiness and that mood of me as the center and what am I getting from me and I'm doing everything for me, they just don't mix. You can't be really happy. You can't get what you really want. So Krishna, because he wants the happiness in his devotees, he sometimes takes a little, shall we say, extreme measures. But of course, Krishna's measure in dealing with Indra is so sweet. It was really, it always strikes me how Krishna doesn't counteract Indra, he doesn't attack him, he doesn't neutralize him, he just lifts up this mountain. Okay, throw everything you've got at me. You know, you think of the hero standing there, okay, you know, punch me as hard as you can. And he's just kind of, so it's like Krishna's doing that. It's like, okay, Indra, you know, throw everything at me. And Indra uses all of his strength and power. It's useless. He wasn't able to do anything. So I'll just read a little bit from Krishna's book. When Krishna saved the inhabitants of Vrindavana from the wrath of Indra by lifting Govardhan Hill, Sarabi Kau from Goloka Vrindavana, as well as King Indra from the heavenly planet, appeared before him. Now the reason, you know why Sarabi came? Anybody know?
Yeah, he wanted some support.
He figured he was in a lot of trouble. I mean, look, if I tried to flood your house and kill you and your children and destroy your car, you know, I couldn't necessarily just walk back up and say, sorry. So he decided if he took a Sarabi cow that he might have more of an in. Indra, the king of heaven, was conscious of his offense before Krishna. He was conscious. So this is one of the main aspects of humility, that I become conscious of my offense before Krishna. I become aware that I'm really not so great. Therefore, he stealthily appeared before him from a secluded place. Now this is also Krishna's mercy, that Krishna allowed Indra to give his apologies in private. So this is a sort of aside. If someone offends us, we should allow that person the opportunity to apologize in a private way. He immediately fell down at the lotus feet of Krishna, although his own crown was dazzling like sunshine. Indra knew about the exalted position of Krishna because Krishna is the master of Indra, but he could not believe that Krishna could come down and live in Vrindavan among the cowherd men. When Krishna defied the authority of Indra, Indra became angry, because he thought that he was all in all within this universe and that no one was as powerful as he. But after this incident, his false puffed-up prestige was destroyed. Being conscious of his subordinate position, he appeared before Krishna with folded hands. So before he didn't have folded hands. He had a lightning bolt in his hands. Now he had folded hands. Being puffed up by my false prestige, I thought that you had offended This is the mood of the prideful person. Why isn't Krishna doing what he's supposed to do for me? Why isn't everyone else doing what they're supposed to do for me? Why is everyone offending me? And now Indra realizes, he says, that actually I was. All right, let's look a little bit here at humility. What do we need it for? Can't we just go on without it? I mean, it's so much trouble. Humility's trouble, isn't it? It's difficult. I mean, it's really easy to pretend to be humble. We're all pretty good at that. That's one of the hallmarks of being a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We very quickly socialize our members. You know, within probably a month or two, you're really socialized to pretend to be humble. And after you've been hanging around for a couple years, we get really good at it. Oh, Prabhu, I'm not very good at that. No, I don't really know anything. I can't do that. We become really expert at that. It's part of your coin for getting along with the devotees of Krishna. But I think we all know, and that's not bad, by the way. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be socially, falsely humble. Why is that a good thing? Just like, I remember many years ago, it was actually my son Keshava, who said, Mati, you know, we're supposed to fast on Ekadasi, but often we eat nicer food. You ever had like Ekadasi cheesecake? He said, so what's the point? Aren't we just getting rid of the whole point? I said, no, because at least we have some idea that this is a different day. Something's in your consciousness that we have to have different foods, a different day. Even if that's all you do, is you're eating buckwheat puris instead of wheat puris. And eventually you may come to the point that, well, wait a minute, what am I really supposed to do today? I'm supposed to be increasing my hearing and chanting and more austerity. But if you didn't do even anything, you'd never be able to segue to the real thing. So the social false humility is a nice reminder, oh yeah, I'm supposed to develop the real thing at some point. You know, if you stop at the social niceties, that's not really going to get you anywhere. But as a bridge, it's very useful. So why do we need the real thing? I mean, why can't we just go on with the, oh, Prabhu, I'm really useless and I can't do anything and I'm so fallen. Why can't we just stop there and have that be enough? Or why do we have to even do that? I mean, why can't we just go on in spiritual life without worrying about this humility thing? I mean, it's so messy and difficult and scary. What do we need it for? I don't want people just like be part of the floor in my classes. I'm really sorry.
I think it's important to develop our constitutional position as a servant, rather as a servant, we have to take a position, and in our position we have a dynamic nature. We have something, we're a part of the hustle of God. So it will put us in the right perspective, in the right position. Right, and less than God, we've got this God in the nature, and it's powerful as well.
Mm. Did everybody hear Pranapri? It's part of our constitutional position that we're a servant, that although we're lower than God, we're a servant of God, we also have a godly nature. Okay, other ideas, why do we need to develop humility? Yes?
To help us develop gratitude for the situation.
Yes, it helps us develop gratitude. And why do we care about gratitude? It will help us to surrender if we're more grateful. Okay, other thoughts, why we need humility. Pride comes before a fall. Right? They say the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Have we seen this? Have we seen the big prideful fall? Have we fallen when we're proudful, prideful? No. I remember once saying to one friend of mine, they asked me a question, and I gave an answer, and they said, are you sure? I said, yeah, I'm sure. I said, 100% sure? Then I kind of stopped. So how many times have we been 100% sure and been wrong? Yeah, definitely it's like this. Or yeah, I can do this, I'm good at this. Bam. It's embarrassing, isn't it? I mean, we think humility is going to be embarrassing, but pride is really embarrassing. Any other reasons why we need him? I mean, we've got to figure out why we need this thing, otherwise we're not going to go through the trouble to get it. Yes?
It attracts Krishna.
It attracts Krishna. I mean, is anyone here very attracted to proud people? Even if they're really qualified? Do you like being around really arrogant people? Anybody like being around arrogant people? We used to show devotional movies every night after the Sunday feast. We'd show the Ramayana and Mahabharata. You know, they had books. They were in episodes. So each week we'd show another episode. And we'd have to get back. So we had a big screen. This was before the days when everybody had a big screen. So we had a big screen and a projector at the school. And what we'd have to do to set everything up, I'd have to take my Sunday feast plate back with me to the Gurukula, and I'd have to eat the Sunday feast while I was showing the movie. So I was eating it in the dark. So, you know, when you're eating in the dark, of course, that's how Arjuna decided he was going to shoot arrows at night, because he watched Bhima eating in the dark. When you're eating in the dark, you can't figure out how to get your fingers from your plate to your mouth, but you don't know what's in your fingers. You know, it's kind of a gamble. So one Sunday, I was eating from the Sunday feast plate, and all of a sudden, I put something in my mouth that was horrible. It was some fig chutney, and the fig I got was rotten. And because everything on my plate was sort of somewhat merged in the dark, I couldn't eat anything on my plate anymore. I had to put the whole plate aside. So arrogance is like that. It ruins the whole plate. You know, you can find somebody who's really intelligent or really creative or really hardworking or just all of those, intelligent, creative, hardworking, so many good qualities. And as soon as they're arrogant, you just don't want to deal with them. We'd almost rather deal with an incompetent, humble person. I mean, maybe temporarily. You don't mind hiring a really arrogant, competent person just to get a job done and get them out the door. But you don't want to stay with them. So we think about the six opulences. Everybody know the six opulences? What are they? Wealth. Beauty, fame, knowledge, renunciation, strength. So if you find someone who's really beautiful, but they know they're really beautiful, it's not so attractive, is it? I mean, if someone's really rich or really famous or really smart or really strong, but they're like, yes, I am this, it sort of ruins it. You need to have that renunciation. You need to have that humility. Actually, that renunciation is the most attractive of the six opulences. Someone who's not attached. So if we even want other people to like us in this world, if we want to be likable, what to speak of if we want Krishna to like us? Of course, Krishna always likes us. But if we want Krishna to want to hang out with us, there's a little difference. Do you have people you like but you don't want to hang out with? You kind of like them, but over there. So if Krishna is going to want to be with us, we have to be humble. You know, Krishna is very humble. Because that's one of his opulences also, is renunciation. Krishna is actually the most humble. He's falling at the feet of his devotees, and he gives all the credit to his devotees. He's Arjuna's chariot driver. He says, no, Arjuna won the battle. I didn't win it. I have one devotee friend who's a life coach, and he gave me some material on how to turn a business from good to great. And it said, the leaders of the great businesses, when everything goes right, they look out their window at all the other people and give them the credit. When it goes wrong, they look in the mirror. And if they have to take the credit for something going right, they chalk it up to luck. If they just can't possibly credit anybody else, they say, oh, it's my good luck. So Krishna's always giving the credit to his devotees. It's interesting, although Krishna's in the center, he keeps pushing the devotees to the center. He's not worship my devotees. So why would Krishna want to associate with us if we're trying to push ourselves into the center? All right, so we have some good reasons. Otherwise, we're proud and embarrassed. People won't like us. Krishna won't want to be with us. We won't be able to surrender. And it's ultimately who we are. I really like Panapu's answer. It's who we are. All right, why don't we just do it? I was speaking to one very advanced senior Vaishnavi, and I said, walking through that door of humility seems like walking through a ring of fire, like they have the tigers jump through the ring of fire in the circus. It's like a door made of fire. She said, no, it's just a door. So why are we so afraid of being humble? Why don't we just do it? Why don't we just, you know, be humble? What are we afraid of? What's stopping us? We're definitely afraid of being exploited. We think if I'm humble, everybody will walk all over me. I think humble means anybody, anything anyone asks me to do, I just say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, I'm going to do it right now. That I'll be exploited, I'll be abused, people will take advantage of me. What else are we afraid of? I think that's the biggest one, but what else are we afraid of? That one? We'll always think that we're right if we're humble. Maybe we'll never think that we're right. Okay. We might think that I'll be depressed. You know, if I'm humble, I'll always think I'm wrong and I'll always be depressed. Oh, I'm so rude. If we think about times when we felt really bad about ourselves, we felt really ashamed, like here Indra feels really ashamed. Shame is a very uncomfortable feeling. So if we associate humility with shame, shame is an inner feeling, and embarrassment is more a feeling of what other people think of us. So if we think humility means shame and embarrassment, well, we've all experienced shame and embarrassment. We didn't like it. And we think humility might be just kind of unlimited, eternal shame and embarrassment. Why else might we not want to be humble? Yeah, we're losing our intelligence. I'll lose my discrimination. I'll become a fool. So not only will other people exploit me, but I won't even be able to make good choices anymore. I won't be thoughtful. I won't have any power of discrimination. By the way, all these ideas about humility, these are given to us by the mind. The purpose of the mind, its function. And we have a mind because we wanted one, by the way. The function of the mind is to keep us in material life. That's its purpose. Just like if you want to see a movie, you want to be an illusion, right? So the movie theater is designed to help you stay in that illusion because that's what you want. You know, it's dark. Everything's set up so that you'll be absorbed in the movie. It's not somebody walking down the aisles of a movie theater saying, oh, by the way, it's just a movie. Oh, by the way, see those lights there? Just some colored lights. And those are just actors. Not somebody popping up in the middle of the show saying, we're just acting. Or look at the projection booth. It's just lights, folks. Hey, why don't you think about the bill you need to pay? Stop thinking about the hero in the movie. No, everything's designed to suck you in because that's what you paid your money for. I mean, who would go see a movie where they kept breaking the illusion? So we want to forget Krishna. Therefore, we're given a mind that every time we try to remember Krishna, it goes, no, 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 don't do that. You have so many more important things to think about and so many more important things to do. So the mind also says, don't be humble. If you're humble, people will exploit you, so don't do it. And you'll be really stupid. And it'll be so painful. And it'll be really hard anyway. And you don't have to do that. Just go ahead without it. So the mind's always telling us this. So the first step is to understand, I really need to do this. And all these things are phony. Look, they must be phony. Because the people who are actually humble, the pure devotees, are they foolish? It's like Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Srila Prabhupada. Are they foolish people? Is Narada foolish? Do they make really bad choices in life? Are they getting exploited? Are people just walking all over them? Are people just walking all over Hanuman? And just abusing him? Is that what's happening? Do we see people like Arjuna and Hanuman? Are they just always like embarrassed about themselves? Is that what Srila Prabhupada's like? Is he always just like some, you know, wallflower? He wasn't like that, was he? So we see that the great saintly persons, they're not exhibiting the behavior that our mind is telling us is associated with humility. They're not exploited. They're not always embarrassed and ashamed. They haven't lost their intelligence. In fact, we find just the opposite. We find the great Vaishnavas are very intelligent, very discriminating. They're heroes. Prabhupada would walk like this. Had a very aristocratic bearing. And again, going back to what Pranabhu said, humility is part of our nature, and we're all full of godly qualities. So this talk of the mind must be a lie. Now let's look at what humility really is. So Prabhupada defines it very simply in Bhagavad Gita 13, 8 to 12 purport. He says, humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. Not to be anxious of having the satisfaction of being honored by others. But we're going to look at three aspects of humility. One that is honest, it's authentic. Another that it's grateful. Another that it's joyful or peaceful. And all together, it's going to bring us to joyfulness. And then we're going to look briefly at how to do this. So it's honest. The honest truth is that I'm very, 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 very small. That just happens to be true. You know, we think of also humility as a lie. Humility is I'm a good cook and I say, no, I'm not a good cook. When I know very well I'm a good cook. But real humility is honest. You know, the whole universe is a little mustard seed. And within the universe, this planet's hardly a speck of dust. And within this planet, you know, this North Island of New Zealand is hardly a speck of dust. And with the North Island of New Zealand, Auckland is hardly a speck of dust. And in Auckland, even New Varshana is hardly a speck of dust. And in New Varshana, each one of us is hardly a speck of dust. You know, you have to be almost landing on the ground before you see the people. Isn't it? So I'm a dust and 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 a dust. That's actually how small I am. And I'm so insignificant. And I've probably said this to you before, I've said this a lot. So how many of you know the names of your great-great-grandparents? Who knows the names of their great-great-grandparents? Okay. So that means your great-great-grandchildren will not know your name. That's your own family. What to speak of, what you were like, what you did, what you felt about. You know, your great-great-grandchildren are not going to be looking for your diaries. They won't even know our name. They won't even basically know that we existed. We'll be irrelevant. That's in our own family. You say, well, I might be really famous like Michael Jackson. You know, 100 years from now, nobody will know him either. Okay, maybe really, really famous, like Alexander the Great or Genghis Khan or somebody like that. Then you've got 2,000 years, and nobody will remember you either. And in those 2,000 years, the only people who remember you are school children studying for their exams, cursing that they have to remember your name. So that's how insignificant we are. You know, if we really rate, we'll get one line in the local paper when we die. The devotees will have a little feast. You know, maybe there'll be a couple articles up on Dandavats. Maybe. And a year later, I mean, a day later, everybody will go about their lives. We'll have our little memorial service. Isn't it? We have our little memorial service for this and that, Vaishnava. And after we eat the feast that afternoon, we go home and we worry about what bills we have to pay or the laundry that has to get done. And maybe we think of them from time to time. So humility is honest. I'm really not very important. I really can't do anything, materially speaking, that has much of any meaning. whatever I do, big buildings that I built and books I make and whatever. It's all just like that on the sands of time. So all and everything I have is borrowed. My beauty, my intelligence, my knowledge, my capability, my ability to walk, my ability to speak, my ability to think, to remember, matasmatir gyanam, apohanam cha. It's all given to me. I don't own it. How do you know you don't own it? How do we know we don't own any of our assets? Yeah. Can they be taken away without my permission? Can we lose our ability to walk in 5 minutes without our permission? Is that possible for any of us? Like right now? We could. Any of us right now can have a stroke, even if you're young. Oh, it's not going to happen to me. I'm only 25. And we wouldn't be able to speak or think or walk. And nobody would ask us first. It's not that Krishna would come and say, excuse me, is it all right if I take away your ability to walk? No. Okay, I'll do it. That can just happen. Everything I think that I have the ability to do and be, I can lose that fast without anybody asking me. That means it doesn't belong to me. Right? That's how we know something doesn't belong to me. If it belongs to me, I can keep it. So that's honest. So everything I am, everything I can do, all the meaningful things I do in my life, whose are they? They're Krishna's. So guess what? I can feel proud of Krishna. I can't feel proud that I'm such a good cook. But I can think, wow, Krishna's so awesome. This ability gave me to cook. Isn't he awesome? Wow. Look what Krishna's doing through me. Isn't that wonderful? And we can be proud of Krishna. Prabhupada talks about that, how the devotee is proud. I've got a really nice master. But I'm not personally taking credit. I mean, I can't even take credit for my spiritual advancement. Can Krishna test us beyond our limits? Do we all have limits? We don't want to tell anybody what they are, but we have them, right? We have limits. And if Krishna were to test us beyond our limits, would we fail? Honestly. So even my determination in Krishna consciousness, he's doing it. He's my austerity. He's my determination. He's my intelligence. Just like Arjuna, when Krishna left, where was Arjuna's power? It was gone. So humility is, it's all Krishna. Humility is not saying you're ugly when you're beautiful. If you're beautiful, you're beautiful. But who's giving you the beauty? Krishna. Humility is not saying that you're stupid when you're intelligent. But who's giving you the intelligence? Krishna. So you become happy and proud. Wow, look at Krishna's intelligence. Have you ever felt that way? You know, you're talking to someone about Krishna and Krishna just gives you intelligence to say something that you didn't even know until it came out of your mouth. And you're like, wow, Krishna is so awesome. Have you ever felt that way? Right? Someone asked you, it happens to me, someone asked me some philosophical question. And I'm sitting here thinking, what am I going to say? And all of a sudden, Krishna just answers it out of my mouth. I'm like, wow, he's amazing. So that's honesty. You paint a picture. Wow, Krishna's amazing. How he gave me this ability to paint this picture. Right? You give the credit to Krishna. Not that I'm talented, but look at Krishna's talent that's coming through me. So that's honesty. I'm tiny, but Krishna may use me to do something great. I have no power, but Krishna may use me to influence thousands of people. Then the next step after that is gratitude. Why should Krishna use me or give me anything? I'm so small and I'm rebellious. How much does the government give the criminals? Not a whole lot. And even though I'm small and fallen, still, Krishna's giving me so much. I understood this on my 45th birthday when I didn't expect any kind of party or anything. It was a total surprise. I went to the temple and the whole community had a party for my birthday. There was lots of prasadam and presents, and I was really overwhelmed with gratitude. And in meditating on it, I realized I was overwhelmed with gratitude because I didn't expect it at all. I want you to think for a minute. Let's say you have $20 and you go to the store and you buy something, and later on you found out that all your friends bought it for only $5. How would you feel? You paid $20, you got something worth $5. How do you feel? Disappointed, right? Lousy. Okay, you go to the store, you've got $20, you buy something that's worth $20. How do you feel? Okay. You go to the store, you have $20, you buy something, you find out it's worth $100. How do you feel? Really happy. So our happiness in life is in direct proportion to how unqualified we feel to get that happiness. The more qualified I feel, the less I'm happy with what I get. If I think I'm getting less than what I deserve, I'm very disturbed. If I feel I'm getting exactly what I deserve, it's like, eh. But if I feel I get more than what I deserve, I'm very satisfied. So if we want to be happy with what we have in life, we can lower our expectations down to zero. If I feel I don't deserve anything, then everything I get is going to be a source of gratitude and joy for me. Interesting, isn't it? You know, I think if I don't expect anything, I won't get anything. No, of course we're going to get things. Everybody gets things. Even the animals get things. It's not that you'll stop getting things. And you can try it for a while if you don't believe it. You know, have an experiment for a week where you just don't expect you're going to get anything, and see whether you still get food. And friends, and I mean, not just food. But all, and it's not that you'll stop getting things, but everything you get will be so much more magical. Wow, Krishna fed me. I mean, we just kind of expect that, right? When we finish the class, we're going to go down and there's going to be something to eat. And if it's not really good, then we're like, oh man, you know it's supposed to be really good. But if I don't expect any food, then whatever's there, I'm going to be so grateful. Understanding that Krishna is giving us gifts out of love and not because we deserve them or we've earned them. Just because he loves us. So this brings us then to peace. And Krishna says something very interesting in the Bhagavad Gita. He said, you can't be happy without being peaceful. As if you have a really good meal and you're afraid someone's going to take it away from you, can you enjoy it? No. If you're always expecting that some enemy is going to do something to hurt you, can you have any pleasure in your life? You know, if you think you have some disease and you went to take a test and you're waiting for the results of the test, can you be happy? Is the doctor going to call back and say, I have cancer? You know, if we're in anxiety about something, we can't be happy. And material life basically means anxiety. So first there has to be peace. So humility means peacefulness. Not just that I'm grateful for whatever Krishna gives me, but whatever Krishna gives me is good. So we can say gratitude is how we respond in humility when we get good things that we like. And peacefulness is how we respond in humility when we get things that we don't like. When we get food that's not so good. When people aren't friendly to us, when people aren't appreciative of us, when people don't honor us, when people don't even notice what we do, when we do something and nobody uses it, when we go someplace and it's less than we expect. So that feeling of peace, that Krishna is the controller, Sarvalokamaheshwaram, and Suridam Sarvabhutanam, that he's the best friend. So we're going to be reading about this next week in Bhagavatam, about these curses that were benedictions on Gajendra and on the crocodile. But this is also true in this Govardhan story. The residents of Vrindavan had their whole homes flooded. They couldn't tell the difference between highland and lowland anymore. And you could say, why did Krishna let that happen? Why didn't Krishna just sort of dismantle Indra and not allow there to be a flood? But because there was a flood, they all got to be with Krishna continuously for 7 days and seven nights, which didn't happen usually. You know, when Krishna's with his parents, then he goes to the forest. When Krishna's in the forest, he leaves the forest animals to come back to the village. So they got to be with Krishna without stopping, and they got to see this wonderful, heroic pastime of Krishna. Now, some people will talk about material good, how you see everything bad is actually something materially good. You know, if your house burns down, maybe what'll happen is you'll get so much money from your insurance policy, you'll be able to buy a better house someplace else. You know, if your car breaks down, then the person who comes to help you is the person who ends up marrying you and is the wonderful love of your life. And, you know, you can read stories like this, especially like Christian magazines. They like to have stories like this. Something apparently terrible happens to somebody and they find out it was really an opportunity for something materially very good. But that's not exactly what we're talking about, although that may also happen sometimes. We're talking about that everything that happens is to bring us to unlimited eternal happiness. Everything that happens to us is to bring us to something spiritually good. So the devotee is always peaceful. I'm not the controller. Krishna's the controller. I give up this view that I have a right to everything working out the way that I think it should work out. And I accept that everything's working out the way Krishna thinks it should work out. Also, I'm peaceful because I'm able to offer all respects to others. I'm able to give the honor to others. Krishna gives the honor to others. He doesn't worry about, well, if I give all the honor to my devotees, nobody will worship me. Nobody will like me. You know, it's funny, I just did this the other day. I had worked on a project with a team, and I had done the bulk of the work. But one of our team members recently passed away, and that would have been the person who would have been making the presentation, not me, because that person was in charge of the team. And when I made the presentation, I gave all the credit to this other devotee, who was the chairperson and who had passed away. And at the end of the presentation, one of the participants said, well, it was really a loss that that devotee left his body since he put together such a nice presentation. And part of me was thinking, no, I didn't. Right? We have this fear that if I give credit to others, if I respect others, then nobody will value me anymore. But that's not a fact. Who's the real person we want to value us? Krishna. We started off by saying that humility means one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. I give all the honor to other people instead. But it's very interesting, and now I would want volume two, that's right, don't get it. So in Krishna book, Prabhupada talks about Akura going to Vrindavan. You know, Akura is kind of the bad guy, takes Krishna out of Vrindavan. But when Akura is going to Vrindavan, he's thinking, when I go to Vrindavan, Krishna will... What's he thinking Krishna's going to do? What do you remember? He'll call me Uncle Akura, and my whole life will be successful. Prabhupada says there that we must work to be recognized by Krishna. He says if you don't work to be recognized by Krishna, then your whole life is condemned. So the secret to being peaceful is to remember, I'm not doing this so that the other jivas in my environment will honor me. I'm doing this so that Krishna will recognize me. It's not that we give up the desire for recognition and honor. It's that we give up the desire for false recognition and honor. We want to be honored by Krishna. We want Krishna to say, well done, my good and faithful servant. Thank you. Thank you for doing this service. We want Krishna to smile at us. Prabhupada said the gopis, they just wanted Krishna to smile at them. That was what they were living for. So that's humility. I take pride that everything wonderful that I am and everything wonderful that I'm doing, Krishna is doing, how wonderful Krishna is. I transfer my pride from myself to Krishna. I'm honest. Then I'm grateful. I understand that everything I'm being given is a gift of love, not because I deserve it. And the happiness in the reciprocation of love is much greater than the happiness you can feel getting things because you think you deserve them. Happiness of receiving an undeserved gift is much higher than the happiness of getting appreciated for something I deserve, or I think that I deserve. And I'm peaceful, because I know that Krishna's recognizing me. I'm getting my happiness in Krishna recognizing me, not in the world recognizing me. And I'm getting my happiness in knowing that everything Krishna does for me is good, even if apparently, materially, it seems bad. And that's humility. And when one achieves that humility, one becomes able to enter into the higher realms of bhakti, which are inaccessible to the proud. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the doorway to nistha is this Trinada piece in each hand. One will stay on a materialistic platform of bhakti until and unless one develops humility. So this is the doorway. How do we do this? It's a little change in our consciousness. Something happens to me that I don't like, and then I think, okay, I'm not trying to please my husband, I'm trying to please Krishna. I'm not trying to please my children, I'm trying to please Krishna. I'm not trying to please my GBC, I'm trying to please Krishna. I'm not trying to please a guest, I'm trying to please Krishna. If I think I'm trying to please the tel president, then when he's not appreciative, I'll get angry at him and I'll hate him and I'll blame him. Because it's your fault I'm not Krishna conscious. But if I remember, I'm not really trying to please him, I'm trying to please Krishna. One devotee said something wonderful to me the other day. He said, you know, it used to be when my wife was getting on my case, I would argue with her. And now I just say to her, listen, dear, I love you. And this thing has nothing to do with whether I love you or not. I still love you. And if she still wants to argue with me, he said, I walk out of the room. And he said, you know, it doesn't always make her calm down. It doesn't always make her peaceful, but it makes me a lot happier. I said, yes, that's the idea. So that's one thing you do. How can I please Krishna in this situation? Other people may be pleased with us, other people may not be pleased with us. You know, when you make a really first-class chapati on Tuesday, they're happy. You make the same chapati on Wednesday, they're not happy. So just shifting my consciousness. I want Krishna to recognize it. A little shift in consciousness. When we do something wonderful, say, wow, Krishna's awesome, instead of, wow, I'm awesome. How wonderful it is to be Krishna's instrument. And to say, thank you, Krishna. Thank you for doing this for me just because you love me. Thank you for giving me so many friends, not because I'm a great person, but just because you love me. Thank you for giving me a nice place to live just because you love me. Not, yeah, I have this nice place because I work for it, I earned it. Simple, little simple things. How wonderful Krishna is, how loving Krishna is, and how I'm working to please Krishna. So today is a good day, Govardhan Puja day, to make some determination. And of course we have long-standing bad habits, and the mind will say to us, don't do that. Don't give the credit to Krishna. If you give all the credit to Krishna, then nobody will appreciate you anymore, and you'll just be at the bottom of the heap. And just practice ignoring the mind. After a while, the mind will be quiet. It really will. But you've got to practice ignoring it. Bhakti Sanatana Saraswati said, beat it with shoes and sticks. You don't have to worry about mind abuse. You won't be arrested for mind abuse. Don't worry about it. You get out a big stick and a big shoe whenever the mind goes, but then you become stupid and you know, you'll lose all your discrimination and everybody will just walk on you. Just be quiet. This is what I'm going to do. And Krishna's going to take care of you. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes, please.
How does Sri Krishna, this point that we're talking about, Sri Krishna and everything? So how do you see Krishna and everything and still have a loving relationship with your husband, your wife, your children, and the bogies? Because there's a tendency to see Krishna and everything and abuse everybody else. So your kids get abused, your wife gets abused, your husband gets abused. So we're just doing this for Krishna.
Okay, so I'm just doing this for Krishna, therefore I'm no longer trying to please my wife, I'm just trying to please Krishna, so therefore I'm just going to be nasty to my wife. Okay. Does that actually make logical sense? Who gave you your wife anyway? Where'd she come from? I mean, by the way, not everybody who wants a wife gets one. I know a lot of people who want wives and they don't have any. How'd you get your wife? Where'd she come from? Who gave her to you? Krishna. By the way, he can take her away too if he wants. That's how you know that she came from Krishna. You can't hold on to her if Krishna wants to take her away. He's got lots of different ways he can take her away too. Who gave you your children? Who gave you the other devotees in the community? Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita that one should think that whatever service one has been given to them by Rishikesh. Every living entity I come in contact with, who's put that living entity in my path? Krishna. Now if I say, well, I don't care if you're pleased with me or not, I only care if Krishna's pleased with me, but how is Krishna going to be pleased with me? By my doing my best to make you happy. Ironically, not so you'll be happy, but so Krishna will be happy. But I'm still doing my best to make you happy. In fact, I'm going to do more to make you happy than a materialist will. Because a materialistic person, they're trying to please their wife or their husband to get something. And when they don't get something, they give up wanting to please them. Well, I cooked a nice meal for my husband every day for the last week, and he never said so much as thank you, so I'm not even going to bother anymore. Today, I'm just going to heat up the leftovers. Dear, what happened to the meal today? You didn't even thank me for the last week. I mean, who cares about you? Just eat what you want. So when I'm so-called trying to please my, you know, other people in my life, it's all selfish. And that's the evidence. As soon as they're not pleased, I get angry, I yell at them, or I give them a silent treatment, or I walk out of the house, or whatever. If I'm trying to please Krishna, and if I have a relationship with Krishna, and I have some sense that he's pleased, how do I know that he's pleased? Well, Krishna says right in the Bhagavatam that the wife's supposed to clean the house, cook nice dishes. So I know that that's pleasing Krishna. That's what it says there. It says in the Bhagavatam, the husband is supposed to take care of his wife, just like you take nice care of your money. Keep it under your personal protection. Said the wife is always supposed to remain, not literally, obviously, but always supposed to remain embraced on the chest of the husband. That doesn't mean you walk around embracing your wife literally all the time. But in other words, you're supposed to always take care of her. That's right in the Bhagavatam. So I know that that's what pleases Krishna. So I'm cooking a nice meal for my husband, and I can go in front of my deities and I can say, you know, my dear Gauri Thai or Radha Krishna, whoever you're worshiping, I made lasagna on Monday and I made parathas on Tuesday. You know, I made a nice meal every day and my husband didn't even thank you for me, but I did it for you. And see what happens. It's actually really sweet. You know, you go to the deities and say, my dear Lord, I told my wife I loved her 3 times a day for the last week. And she was still nasty. And I took out the garbage, and I fixed the chair that had been broken for 2 years that she'd been nagging me about. And I paid the bills on time for once. I actually took out the garbage without her even reminding me. And she never even noticed. In fact, not only did she not notice, but then she started harassing me about other things that she'd been holding in reserve for when I finished her list of nagging things. And when I told her I was sorry for offending her, she used the opportunity of my saying I was sorry to remind me of all the other things I'd done wrong in the last 10 years. But I hope you're happy with me for doing the right thing. So to go, actually go to Krishna, just like you read the book distribution scores to Krishna, you know, you can go to Krishna with everything. Krishna, this is what I did this for you. 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 Whether I get material reciprocation or not from other people. Because, you know, sometimes you will and sometimes you won't. So these are Krishna's children. Prabhupada wrote that in a letter. He said, these are Vaikuntha children. Krishna's given them to us. We have to take very nice care. So these are Krishna's children. I mean, just meditate. You know, that Radha Giri Hari, they have spoken to you, that they're standing in front of the deities, and out of Giri Hari's mouth comes, you are to take care of this jiva. that's really doing it for Krishna. We have two kinds of Maya. One is the renounced, the Brahmachari Sannyasi Maya, and one is the Grihastha Maya. So the Brahmachari Maya is the car belongs to nobody. It's Krishna's car. That means it's nobody's car. You know, it's just the temple's car. So why put air in the tires? Because nobody's, somebody else will do it. And the Grihastha Maya is, it's my car. I'm putting air in the tires because it's my car. So, no, it's Krishna's car. So practice like that. And it, you can find, you know, whenever I become disappointed, angry, upset at somebody else not reciprocating with me, so I'm trying to practice saying the reason I'm upset is not this other person's behavior, but my having the wrong object of affection and service. That I'm thinking I'm supposed to please the GBC body instead of I'm supposed to please Krishna. Or I'm thinking I'm supposed to please this department head. And it's my problem. I have the wrong object. I'm thinking my family is supposed to worship. Now that doesn't mean that those feelings immediately go away. But you get a sense of detachment and a sense of peace at the same... It's almost like you have both at the same time. I don't know how to explain it any better than that. Like Judd Bart, that said that he felt waves of dissatisfaction when King Rahugana insulted him. But he was able to be detached from it. So we may naturally feel disappointed. You know, if I work hard for 6 months on a project and the people that I work for, you know, I send it to them. Here's the project I worked for 6 months for and they don't even respond. That happened to me recently. I didn't even get a, you know, thank you. I mean, finally I wrote to them and I said, did you get it? Was it okay? And then they said, oh, sorry, we should have said something. So, of course, there was some dissatisfaction. But I could understand my dissatisfaction meant I wasn't really purely doing this for Prabhupada and Krishna. I was doing it for something else. The problem is in me. And if I take it and I say, here, Krishna, here's what I did for you. I hope you're happy. Then those things were just gone. And when you do things for Krishna, you'll do them better. If you're actually doing them for Krishna. Because it won't be that what does Krishna say? The determination, steadfast in yoga practice, that's unaffected by success or failure. Where does that come from? Because you're doing it for Krishna. You're not doing it for your external reciprocation. Thank you for asking that. Thank you very much. Because often people would think, like, well, I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing it for Krishna. Who cares? And you feel that. Could you imagine that in a business? You know, if you're working in a business, you know, you're thinking, well, that's how you treat the customers. I'm not trying to please you. I'm just trying to, you know, sell our product. Well, guess what? You're not going to sell any product if you don't please the customers. It's not going to work. What's our product anyway? You know, we're in Mahaprabhu's business. You know what our product is? Anybody know what product we're selling? Bhakti. What's bhakti mean? Love. Who says our product is love? Okay, I'm going to sell you some love here. You know, like, beat you up selling you love. Make any sense. I'm just working for love here. We can step on you to work for love. As long as we sell lots of love. We can kick you in the process. I don't think that works. Anything else? Yes?
When you were talking about apology, a private apology, if we're the offender, should we want to make a public apology with the person who's accepting the apology is having to make a private apology?
Well, it depends who you've offended. I mean, it's interesting because Indra did actually offend all the residents of Vrindavan. He didn't just offend Krishna. And still he made a private apology. But Krishna accepted his private apology.
Okay.
So I'd say that depends. There are times when at least we should be willing to make a public apology. If I've offended the whole public. You know, I don't think I have the right to demand a private apology. And this is part of gratitude. Krishna was in rights to kill Indra. I mean, Indra was guilty of attempted murder of, you know, thousands and thousands of people and animals. So Krishna had every right, legalistically, for Indra to be executed, for Indra to be deprived of his position. I mean, Indra was already publicly humiliated, really. And Krishna could have said, now you go to each and every member of Vrindavan and offer your apology. He could have. But he didn't. And part of Indra's gratitude was that Krishna was willing to make it private. And not only make it private, but Krishna didn't take away his position at all. He said, go back to your position, but now do it right. So, you know, if I'm conscious that I've committed a public offense, I should be willing to make a public apology and public retribution. And if the people involved are willing to have it be private, then I should be very grateful. But that's part of the peace part of humility, that I don't make any demands. I don't have the right to make any demands. And that's again a very joyful thing. It's not a depressed thing. I don't have the right to. I'm an offender. I'm a criminal. What do I have to demand? I can't even demand service. I can just ask. Would you please give me my service back, please, if you want? And I'll do my best to be good. You know, what more can we ask? But then we're peaceful. As soon as I think that I have the right to make any demand, I lose peace. Immediately. And Krishna will give us he'll give us so much more than what we need. He's even right now giving us so much more than what we need. Do all of us have more clothes than we need? Anybody here have only as much clothes as they need to live? Do we have only as much food as we need to live? Anybody here have only as much food as you need to live? What about varieties of food? You know, we could probably just live on rice and beans. And we're not very humble, at least I'm not very humble. And Krishna's giving me so much more than what I need when I'm proud. How much more will he give me when I'm actually humble? I mean, I don't have to worry about it. Krishna provides the animals who are really, you know, how do you get to be an animal? You really have to have done some bad karma. And he takes care of them too. Not very gorgeously, but he does take care of it. Even the state government feeds the prisoners. Not very nicely, but they do feed them. Krishna takes care of us much more opulently than the government takes care of the criminals. I always give the example of flowers. I don't know of any prison house where the government provides the prisoners with flowers. And Krishna's given us a world where there's flowers. So that's when he gives the atheists flowers. I don't need to worry that if I make no demands, that I won't get. Madhavendra Puri didn't even make an effort to get food, you know? He didn't even beg. And he ate. Is that right? Okay, we should stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Shiva. Thank you.